Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, co-founder and CEO of Employee Cycle, Bruce Marable, and you know us. We're your friendly HR analytics dashboard. That's right. You probably didn't even know that HR dashboards existed, but yes, we do. So you know all that work you put into exporting all those messy spreadsheets and CSVs from all your different HR systems, pulling data from your HRIS, ATS, engagement, performance management system, all these systems to turn it to what typically looks like a messy dashboard in a spreadsheet. Well, no longer do you have to do that because now Employee Cycle is here to the rescue. Simply just go to employeecycle.com, create a free account, start connecting your system so that we can pull all your people metrics into one real-time, beautiful HR analytics dashboard. But that's enough about us because today we have an awesome guest. So please help me welcome to the podcast, Walt Brown, founder of 7Q, 7P, which stands for 7 questions, 7 promises. And today we're going to talk about the best way to empower your employees. Walt, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Oh, great.
Thank you so much for making time to get on our podcast and share some of your thoughts. We really appreciate it.
Great role.
So to kick this thing off, the question that we always like to start off with is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
How did I end up in the wonderful world of HR? Some people refer to me as a seasoned multi-company entrepreneur. I refer to myself as an entrepreneur sometimes. In 1986, I took the IQ exam and scored low enough and was allowed to start my own company. And grew that for 20 years and sold it in 2006. It had become a .com and a pretty cool thing. And people were saying, what are you going to do, Walt? What are you thinking about? And I said, I really don't know. And they said, have you ever thought about coaching or facilitation? And I was like, no, I was a statistics and accounting guy in college. I don't know anything about coaching or facilitation. And they said, no, you need to really try it. And that's for the last 13 years, I guess, is where we are now. I've been coaching and facilitating leadership teams around building culture and execution and all that kind of stuff. A year ago, year and a half ago, I wrote a book that kind of summarized all of the learnings and understandings. So that's at the end of the day, it's all about people. And without people, it would be easy.
Yeah, you're telling the truth. And so your company name is pretty interesting, 7Q, 7P. So first, I want to know, how did you come up with that name? And then second, what does your company 7 Questions, 7 Promises do?
What we're doing. So where it came up with is since 2007, I've been helping companies install this operating system called the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And I've taken about 170 clients through it, which is like 17,000 hours in the room with these leadership teams. And around client number 85, it was back when we used to hear a lot of people complaining about millennials. I think people still complain about millennials, but they were complaining about millennials. And, I sat back and scratched my head and said, I really don't see what you're talking about. I don't subscribe to the same stereotype you're throwing on these people. And I definitely don't see it in the clients that I'm working with. And what I did is I asked my clients for permission to engage with their millennials to see what we were doing through my program that was blowing up the stereotype. And what they came back with through these focus groups is that by their companies going through the program, the companies were able to answer and get on the same page what yes looked like to 7 fundamental things. And then once they knew what yes looked like, then they were able to basically turn to their organization and say, we're going to build one single organization where everybody here's going to be able to say yes to these 7 things. So we got to answer 7 questions, and then we roll it out to the organization where we're basically making a promise where we want everybody to be able to say yes. So you're probably wondering what the questions are, right? So
exactly.
So what they are is I'll go through it a couple times, but we want people to go say, yes, I belong. yes, I believe. Yes, I understand and embrace what I'm accountable for. I understand and embrace how I'm measured. I understand and embrace how I am heard, how I'm developed, and how I may maintain balance. And you go through these things, and basically, you know, when somebody enters an organization, they really want to know whether they belong, because at the end of the day, it's a tribe. And so we describe what belonging means by our values and our behaviors, and what we're buying into with regards to believing is this is what our vision is, and this is what we think the big milestones are, and this is our strategy, and these are our priorities. And we're trying to get everybody to understand what that looks like and get them to buy into those priorities and strategies. And then we would like to be very open with regards to where we're trying to get to and what everybody's accountable for. Clarity around roles and responsibilities, and, you know, people being super clear what they're supposed to be doing and having a voice with regards to the accountabilities they're taking on. And then, you know, how is everybody measuring their progress, and individual able to measure how they're doing, and then how the organization listens and how they can participate in the conversation of the organization, and then clarity around how you're developed and how the organization offers opportunities for development. And then finally, the important question around what does balance look like, and not just work life, but you know, this is what the job pays, and this is what we really mean. We're not going to say you're going to come work for a big accounting firm and pretend we don't have a busy season. We're going to work 80 hours a week. We're going to be very upfront to what it means to belong and believe. Accountable, measured, heard, developed, and balanced. And I help them get on the same page and then roll out that promise. A lot of talking, but that's what summary of what the seven questions, seven promises are all about.
Awesome. And, you know, with a lot of talking, that's why we have you on the podcast. So you should fit right in.
Thank you, Bruce. But, it's a difficult thing to do, because as a leader goes, so goes the leadership team. And as the leadership team goes, so goes the organization. And, you know, it all starts with that leader. If they buy in to recognize that maybe they're going down the path of having multiple organizations that are divided, they got to buy into these seven questions first. It kind of goes from there.
So our topic today is the best way to empower employees. And so in order to go into that and really discuss what this looks like, I think we first need to define, what does an empowered employee look like?
Yeah, right. And is that something you're trying to, is that a question, or are you going to tell me?
Yeah, that's a question. We would love, all of us listeners, including myself, would love to know, what does an empowered employee look like?
Yeah, so I spend a lot of time, back in 06, I was like a pilot guy for Gallup around engagement. So I've studied engagement for a long time. When I think of empowerment, I also think about the word accountability. And, you know, empowerment and accountability are something that people do for themselves, as opposed to something you do to them. You know, and if you can take down the barriers to someone being empowered, then they can actually become empowered. Does that make any sense, what I just said there, Bruce?
It does. It definitely does.
And, you know, so it comes back in and creating an area where, you know, employees are super cognizant about what's going on, you know, why they're supposed to be there, where they fit into the overall, is quite important in order for anybody to be empowered. If they really don't know how they fit, you know, here I am with my puzzle piece, but I don't see how I fit into this puzzle, they're never going to be empowered. So we're trying to get them empowered by understanding what the seven questions look like. And then the other side of it, have you ever seen the SCARF model? It's a psychology model about the way people fit into tribes. You ever heard of SCARF before?
No, I haven't, but please tell us what that means.
And I'm butchering it. You know, I wrote about this in my book called The Patient Organization, and I am forgetting the psychologist's name right now. I apologize. But it's SCARF. And what we're talking about here is a way an individual fits into a tribe or an organization. As humans, we're just like super sensitive to the way we fit into something. And if we don't feel like we fit, we kind of go into an avoid, or almost like even an attack mode, as opposed to like an approach or like joy or creative mode. And there's five triggers that trigger people to kind of go into the approach avoid. Does that make sense? So I'm going to describe what the five triggers are. We have,
yeah, for sure.
So status is one of them. You know, clarity around how you fit into the tribe. We're not saying a boss type status, but, you know, here you're a key part of this group. We need you to be doing this, your status is secure with you know, with his team. And so people understanding what their status is and then having it reinforced is really important. The second one is certainty. Now, humans want to know where we're going. You know, where, why is the tribe migrating to here? And we want to be able to see the future and understand what this means for us. And if we don't have certainty about what our job is, about where the organization's going, then we start to fill in the blanks. And that filling in the blank creates this anxiety that, you know, we go into a void mode, which certainly isn't empowerment. The third one is A for autonomy. We, as humans, hate to be micromanaged. We want to know what we're accountable for and given the direction and allow us to do our work, at least within a certain level of context. S-C-A-R, R is relatedness, which means do we have the values of the organization and, you know, do we really belong in this tribe or not? The worst thing in the world is to be part of a group to know that you really don't have the same values and beliefs as the rest of the group, right? It's hard to be bought in. And then the F is fairness around not only fairness with the way you're being treated as an individual, but when we sense other people in the organization not being treated fairly, we actually go into this sort of protection mode or avoid mode. And through the seven questions, we're trying to make sure we're checking yes to all of those, you know, S-C-A-R-F. I'm clear what my status is. I know where we're going. I buy into it. It's clear what I'm accountable for. I'm autonomous. I relate to the organization with the values and the beliefs. And it's fair. You know, the rules are out in the open and they're being applied fairly. So I'm in this approach mode. I'm in this creative mode, which pretty much equals an empowered employee. Is that too much talking, or does that kind of bring it down to the ground?
No, that was great. And we're definitely going to include the SCARF model and framework in the show notes, because that was a really comprehensive but also succinct way to really give an overall view and perspective around what does empowerment look like. That was awesome.
Yeah.
So now that leads me to start asking you questions around how people can really implement this and measure the impact. So one of the reasons why people love our podcast is because we try to make sure that there's some type of actionable plan or framework moving forward once they listen to all the great things you have to say. So I want to break the rest of the podcast into three different groups. The first will be, one, as an HR people leader, how do I identify employees who are not empowered? The second is, how do I go about empowering those employees? And then the third is, how do I measure the impact of them being empowered, and how do I maintain these employees as empowered individuals? So the first, let's start with, how do I identify a certain population or cohort or even an individual in an organization that is not being empowered?
You know, I think you can almost replace the word empowered with engaged, which is kind of a hard and tired, used up word, right? If somebody doesn't feel like they're being honored and are really part of a group, then they really have trouble kind of encouraging themselves to be empowered or engaged. And so, you know, the way to measure it is some form of survey, whether you're using the 12 questions of employee engagement. We actually use the 7 questions as a, you know, basically like an employee engagement and culture survey, Bruce. You know, we're asking on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, do you realize you belong or do you believe? And, you know, measuring it is very important. But the issue we have is, what people hate is to be measured and then to get the results back and nobody has a clue on how we're going to improve it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's like the cycle that hits most people. It's, you know, employers like, what the hell? I'm going to take this engagement. I can't cuss, right? This isn't like FCC.
Sure. No, go ahead.
That's a technical term. You know, but you just gave me this survey and I don't ever see the results back, and I don't even see what kind of plan you're putting in place to address the answers I gave you. So the next time it comes out, what do the employees do? Screw this, right? You're not doing anything. And so in order to be able to, how to go about improving it, of course, I'm pushing the 7 questions, but every organization has what I refer to as an organizational operating system in place. And that includes all your HR processes, and it just includes the whole way you run the company. And whether it's an ad hoc system or whether it's something you brought from outside, like Rockefeller Habits or Gazelles or Scaling Up or Holacracy or 40X, these are all names of like packaged operating systems that are on the market out there nowadays, Bruce. I do one called EOS. And your operating system needs to be able to, map the tools and the methods and the rhythms and the institutions inside your operating system back to whatever empowerment or engagement survey you're using. So if you're using the seven questions, we need to be able to help the individual contributor see that these are the tools we're using that are intended to help them empower themselves. And so this kind of leads us to the next point. So I think I talked about kind of determining whether they're empowered or not was through like some form of survey. Then how you
I actually want to ask a question about that, because something I never thought about and what you just said is that in order to even get the best answers from your employees, or maybe not the best answers, but the most truthful or candid or transparent answers when they're filling out the engagement surveys, it's much more than the questions that you're asking in the survey. It's actually telling and showing the employees that if and when they fill this out, then their results, the results of this will actually have actions behind it.
Yeah.
So you're saying in order to even do this in the first place, you actually need to start at the end.
Yeah.
And actually tell people, once you fill this out, yes, this isn't just some BS survey that you're going to take and then most people just believe, oh, I'm going to fill this out, almost like a complaint box, and then nothing happens. But instead, in order to even make sure that you're doing this right in the first place, you first need to start with telling everyone that you really will make change and that people's voices will be heard. Is that correct?
Yeah, they have to recognize that you're going to make some kind of change, but then we have to have the change be systematic. You have to have some form of system that you're going to run the changes through, right? They need to be able to see the mechanisms you're using and understand these are the organization's tools or mechanisms that we're going to use to pull the levers to adjust what your answers were on these things. I'm using pronouns and things and stuff, but if you don't have that system in place, then you might as well just not even do the survey. You do more damage asking if you can't help them see how you're going to fix it with their help than not asking them at all.
Nice. So then I've taken this survey, but even before that, I've let people know and let our team know that we really are viewing this as something that we're taking seriously, and we want to make sure that once we get your feedback, we're going to do our best job possible to make sure that we're changing things that's in our power to make this a much better employee experience. And so now I'm to the point where I totally understand where we're dropping the ball and where we're lacking empowerment or engagement in certain population groups or departments. How do I make sure that people are taken from the SCARF model? People feel like they have autonomy. People are really connected to the work that they're doing, and people really enjoy what they're doing and feel accountable to the point where they do feel empowered.
Yeah, this is 100% with you. That question comes out all the time. So I like to anchor the answer like in Gallup's engagement surveys that come out every 3 years. The results typically come back where 50% of the employees are neutrally engaged, which I kind of say, you know, they come to work, they're fine, they're like a lowercase yes to the seven questions. They aren't really taking any energy away from the organization. They're not adding any. They say that 32% of the people feel are engaged, or let's just say are empowered, feel they're empowered and coming to work and laying that power down. And then 18% feel like they're disengaged or not empowered at work. And Gallup says it's a one-to-one relationship where one empowered person is offset by an unempowered person. And the 50% just kind of roll along. And I think one of the really healthy ways to look at this is, and Gallup hasn't exactly said it, it's just more for me studying over the years, but 50% of your folks are going to be totally happy just being neutrally engaged, Bruce. Just being neutrally empowered. Yeah, I know what my job is. I come in at 8, I leave at 5. I got other interests, but I do a good job. And that's all the real interest I have in being part of this organization. Does that make sense? That's the healthy view.
It does. And so based off of what you just said, should companies take that benchmark and say, well, if 50% of our people are lukewarm, but they stay longer than the average, or if we expect people to stay 18 months and they stay 2 years, but they were 50% and lukewarm, is that okay?
Yeah, it's okay, because lukewarm is better than no warm at all. Right, if it's room temperature. I mean, right, you're lukewarm, we're saying it's not room temperature, it's got some warmth to it. So we're not saying these people are below the line. They're just kind of, you know, you got to have the, you got to have the train cars to carry the heavy load. You know, not everybody can be an engine. And so just the recognition that 50% of your folks being neutrally engaged is actually healthy and okay, that takes a lot of load off leadership thinking, we got to get 100%. No, let's just work on the other 50.
That's interesting. So it's almost like looking at it the same way as unemployment. You'll never get below a certain number. Never. You'll never have 100% of people working. Got it. Okay.
No, and it wouldn't even be healthy to have 100% not working. You know, or have them working. And then, so we have to pay attention to, are our empowered people and our people who are not empowered or disengaged. And the thing to recognize about this is these two groups care about something. And when you offer up what they care about and you sing the tune they like, then they're going to step in and they'll be engaged or empowered, and they'll create empowerment for themselves when they understand what the rules are and what you're shooting for. And so the goal is to create such clarity of how they can contribute and be involved that they empower themselves. And then also to create so much clarity that if since they care, they're looking for the answer. And if you're able to say, hey, this is the answer you're looking for, but we can't give that to you at this organization, then you're giving them the opportunity to self-select out. So you're not doing it to them. They're doing it for themselves. These people, the disengaged and actively engaged, this 50%, are going to bring energy. And our goal is just to match their energy with what we're looking for, and then they become empowered. And if we can't match, then we need to be open and honestly enough with them that they can choose to move on. Because all we're doing is holding them back from being in their highest and best use somewhere else.
Got it. Interesting.
It's a lot.
It is. It is. And we're trying to break this down in a very short period of time. And so what are some of the tangible things that I'm now doing once I understand that maybe we will never be able to get over a certain percentage of people being more than lukewarm based off of statistical analysis that's been done by organizations like Gallup? And I understand that there are a few people that are going to carry the heavy load. Are there any specific intangible things I can do to make sure that we are focusing on the right people so that we're getting the right retention or whatever the goal is to make sure that your people are empowered?
Yeah, the intangible, you know, it starts with as the leader goes, so goes the leadership team. As the leadership team goes, so goes the rest of the organization. And if you have people, either the leader or the leadership team is not living up to the standards that you're espousing and trying to hold people to, then it's going to fail. You can't say one thing. Humans are just, we're just natural bullshit meters. We walk, you know, and the second we hear bullshit from somebody, the second we stop following them, right? And if your leaders aren't like what I call the four A's, if the leaders aren't aligned, if they aren't accountable, if they aren't authentic, and if they aren't aware, which means aligned to the greater good of the future, if they're not accountable, means are they really doing what they're saying they're going to do? If they aren't authentic, meaning, you know, vulnerability-based stuff where, you know, they're saying one thing and they're pretending to know something, then if they're just not aware, like if the individual contributor sees a fault in any of those A's, they disengage and they stop following. They go to neutral at the best. So it's super important for those, you know, from an intangible standpoint, you got to get the leadership on the same page first.
And then for the last part, I want to talk about what are the things that HR leaders, people leaders, and CEOs that are listening as well should be measuring or looking to expect when they have a more empowered workforce. Is it higher engagement? Is it more retention? Is it an increase in productivity? Is it all of the above?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is where I lean heavy on the Gallup numbers, you know, and I actually see it in the clients that I'm working with. Almost all the clients that come in and we do a little survey, or just, it's not even a formal survey sometimes. We just make a list of all the employees and we ask them to put pins on the graph of like neutral engagement, disengagement, engaged. And almost always it starts out with 18% or so are disengaged, 50% are neutral, and 32% are engaged. And I say, what if half of these people were engaged and 50% were just neutrally? And that's sort of like what Gallup calls their top quartile. And from the top quartile people, they're seeing 17% increases in their EBITDA and bottom line. They're seeing 10% more customer loyalty. They're seeing increases in retention, like in multiple year type pieces. It impacts the bottom line what's turnover nowadays, Bruce? Three-year retention? Is that what the average retention is in America nowadays?
It might be around two and a half.
Yeah, two and a half. So, you know, I go down this path of how long does it take to truly get an employee up to, like, minimal viable employee?
Right, and that's 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, 3 to 6 months, and then maybe a year to get them where they're return, or maybe even 2 years to get them to a full return on investment. And, you know, and you're cycling them out. So they're never, they got to stay for 3 years for you to even get a return. And then, you know, if it's really 3 to 6 months, can we shorten that to a month and a half or 3 months before they become minimal viable? So that's kind of a harsh way to talk about people, but right. And, you know, getting on the same page, this is what it means to belong and believe and be super accountable. I got this other thing that we call the organizational graph that helps people see accountabilities, but that's for another day.
Got it. So now we're going to move to my favorite part of the interview, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. So the real question, do you like to eat bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
Oh, I really enjoy bread pudding. How do I like it made? That's interesting. Never thought about how you make bread pudding, except I know bread pudding when I see it. It's kind of like pornography. I know pornography when I see it. and I know good bread pudding. I like real whipped cream on it. I'll even eat like vanilla ice cream with it.
Got it. That was the first time I think I've ever heard porn and bread pudding in the same sentence.
But it's so, true, right?
That's amazing. Yes. All right. So now I'm going to move to the random question.
That wasn't random enough.
Okay. That was random. That was, you know what? I probably could skip the random question now, but I'm not, just because I ask it every single time. So the random question, what's your favorite word?
Oh, gosh. Love.
That was awesome. Great. And then to stay on brand for the ridiculous question, what's the most ridiculous employee engagement question you've ever seen?
I shouldn't say this. There's a group of 12 where some of them I scratch my head and say I don't quite understand that question. Is that what I'm supposed to be asking?
So for instance, there are people that want to know, how do you like the snacks? So what's a specific question that you've ever seen on an employee engagement survey? Have you ever seen any ridiculous questions?
No, you know, when you start asking employee engagement, I just go right to Gallup's 12 questions, and I go to my 7 questions, you know, so in terms of what drives engagement, I don't think it's about the snacks, right? It's all about the scarf model type stuff. God, I didn't answer that very well for you, Bruce, at all. Most ridiculous question, you know. But, you know,
that's all good.
It's like just the culture is not a well-defined word. And, you know, what people think culture is, it's really just a combination of all the beliefs and attitudes with your systems that create opportunity for individual participation and growth, you know. And if any of the questions aren't asking about how the individual participates and how the individual grows and how the individual fits to the tribe, then it's a stupid question.
Got it. Well, that was a great answer there. well, this has actually been a lot more entertaining than a lot of our podcast. I mean, they're all educational, and I try to make it a little entertaining, but this was very entertaining as well. It had me laughing all the way through. So thank you so much for being an awesome podcast guest.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So where can people find you and your company online?
It's just, you know, www.7q7p, the number 7, and then the letter Q and number 7, and then P.com.
Great. We'll definitely include that in the show notes. So if you've all learned a lot and also laughed a lot like I did throughout this episode, then please leave us a 5-star rating on Google Review or iTunes or wherever else you see a place where you can leave a review for us, because that shows that you're getting value out of it and that we're doing a good job. And also, if this is the first Employee Cycle podcast episode you've ever listened to, because you're already a super fan of Walt and you just had to listen, or you just found that the topic was compelling, but now you want a lot more because you just think that this is a great podcast, then please subscribe on iTunes. Oh, well, actually now it's Apple Podcasts and Spotify or whatever other podcast player that you're using. And last but not least, all you HR and people ops leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.
This episode of the Employee Cycle Podcast was edited and produced by Lux Podcast Production. Lux is a creative audio suite that helps clients create, market, and measure their show. Visit luxpodcasts.com to learn how a podcast can benefit your organization. That's LUXEpodcasts.com.